This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician.
Jenny hit Austin.
My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It's Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast, coming to you live from Trinidad World Recording Studios, my recording studio here in Fort Worth, Texas. Email us, phil@philpritchett.com, or call me, 817-733-5256, to book the full band, or to come record at Trinidad. Well, our good friend Kurt South is here today. How you doing, South?
I'm good.
Man, it's been a long summer, a long, hot summer, hasn't it?
Yeah, it sucked.
On our last...
It is just sucked.
Man, it's just been unbelievably warm.
And I've just had, since June, I've just had like 35 outdoor gigs.
I thought you were going to say you've had a rash. You know, just from breaking out in sweat, you know.
I don't have syphilis, Phil.
No,
I'm just hot.
I don't know. I was bracing myself for some sort of medical disclosure.
No, nothing like that. I've just been, it's been the busiest summer I've ever had, and a good portion of it has been out of doors.
We did a little run in July. I can't remember. We did Brewster Street in Corpus, Zapatos in College Station, and...
I'm already sweating just
I know.
About
I mean, in a private party somewhere. All outside. All 109 degrees.
I do not want to hear any registered complaints from you. You've been up in the 6,500 foot elevation in Colorado most of the summer.
Jeez.
I've been just so nice. Working the plantation at the South Compound in Crowley, Texas.
Yeah, just looking at your burned yard. Of course, we've had some rain this summer, a little bit.
Enough.
I mean, it's green. Usually I come back from Colorado, my yard's just dirt, just done.
Yeah.
But it's nice and thick this year, and I haven't watered it one time.
It's just all the weeds.
Before we go down to, like, Austin, San Antonio.
It's bad.
Totally. I mean, just, there's, you know, all the trees are just dead. You know, just brown. I mean, it's pretty bad.
It's
crazy
around,
dry.
It's pretty bad down around where I live, because I live south of Fort Worth.
Yeah.
So we haven't gotten
bad down there.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
But really, like, up, even like Amarillo and stuff, they've had pretty good rain.
Yeah.
So some weather talk there for you. Good grief. Just what our listening folks want to hear on RadioFreeTexas.org.
My corn just died in the
field
this year.
Yeah, that's right.
So some died in the field.
They want to hear the agricultural report, according to you and me. we're driving down the road to a gig. We see some thunderstorms. I got some rain up here. Well, man, we had an email. I had an unusual email from an old Phil Pritchett, the Full Band member. Some of the guys who listen to the show a lot, I'm always pleased to see, are guys who played with the band, you know, kind of checking
guys
in and stuff.
Guys who you fired unceremoniously.
Yes, who
unceremoniously somewhere.
Were cut or let go. You know that's not true. Everyone just gets married and gets a better job. That's what happens to my bands, you know? Thank God for Stu and Blue. They
not
still
just a
need
better
the,
job,
they
just
love the
get
gig.
A job.
They're just, look, dude, can you match this? I'm like, ha, 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 oh, no, God, no.
I got an offer from Blockbuster Video. Well, you better take that.
It always starts too. They start dating a real nice girl. She comes to a couple gigs, and then that's it. They don't, you know, I mean, come on, you know, your future wife or something, she doesn't want you gone every weekend. So that starts to be an issue for guys. They start having children. It's not, you know, this isn't it's a tough deal, very tough deal. Hard to make it work. Well, I get a email the other day from a great father, a great husband, a former bandmate, Doug Holm, the great Doug Holm. You can see his picture there on the inside of the Suburban Legends album with me, I don't know, 3 years or so. Really started playing a lot. He was around when the van was bought, you know.
Yeah.
You know, when we started playing lots of shows, we made the record in Nashville. Doug Holm, he always gives me some little ideas. He did ask if you and I maybe would approach the songwriting. You know, just because you know, talk about like your songwriting process or something like that. You know, he said, I think maybe your listeners might want to hear, you know, how you guys go about writing songs. You know, what kind of happens? It's a question, you know, you probably get asked a lot, South. By that guy at the bar.
All the interviewers just lining up to catch a quote.
But, you know, when you're trying to get paid at night at the bar and there's the guy just finishing a hamburger, kind of drunk, he wants to know, hey, man, where'd you get that song? Where'd you write that song? Yeah. Well, how do you do that? Do you got a bunch of poetry laying around? You're like, if I only had some music. Or do you have a bunch of compositions, musical scores? You're like, if I only had some words. What comes first for you?
Usually... the words and music are connected kind of almost.
All comes at the same time? I mean, does it all kind of come at the same time?
It all just kind of comes out. I'll start, I start with a melody, a chord structure.
Right.
And I have a melody and a rhythm. And, you know, I try to match the words up with how the music sounds. I've gotten less and less concerned with the poetry side of things.
Yeah.
I think that's really overrated, at least for me.
Right.
I could never.
What do you mean, as far as like just trying to rhyme stuff, or?
Well, no, not trying to rhyme, but just I used to really try to change the world with lyrics.
That's right.
I was one of those arrogant jackasses who thought that.
But isn't that the purpose of your music? Don't you want to go out there?
No, the purpose of the music, I think, what I've found works better is to just make a simple connection and talk plainly and give everybody a point of reference that then go, oh, yeah, I know what that's like, instead of trying to, you know, I know, and put equal emphasis on the sound and the feel, because music is about sounds first and foremost, you know.
Sure.
And so strong melody, good feel, good rhythm, and then just a simple message that somebody's going to go, oh, yeah, I felt that too. And that's where the connection starts. Instead of, I used to try to just blow you away. Listen to this line, man.
This line
right there embodies me as a writer, you know, and all that stuff. And it's easy to alienate an audience, I think, if you're looking solely at that.
Yeah, I think you're
if
right.
If the melody comes second in your songwriting process, I think you've got it backwards.
Man, I think so too.
I think the melody and lyrics are extremely important, but I think it's easy to put so much weight on the lyrics that you forget that you're making music. You know, Bird Parker, the great saxophone player, mm-hmm. said, if the man on the street can't whistle it, then you don't have a song.
That's right.
And as I've learned and I think grown as a songwriter, I've come to embrace that more and realize that I'm not going to blow anybody away with my lyrical prowess, but I can put together a good melody and an overall
encapsulate
song.
A sentiment or idea.
It just passes along a simple feeling, you know. And that's really all it is.
Yeah, I never really relate to people who talk about having lyrics or something or laying around because I'm the same way. I think that you do start with just something. Try to have something catchy and a little guitar signature, little thing, you know, or even a drum beat, you know, or just kind of the way the song starts or something. And you kind of start with that, and then I kind of have a sentiment, an overriding sentiment about something.
Yeah.
Or maybe just a line from the song. It's a little different, but I think definitely, though, the music comes first. You've got to have something to go on with that.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be some sort of complicated guitar part or melody or something.
You've got to have a hook.
A hook, just, man. Just even if it's just one chord, just kind of... but the drums driving, you know.
I think having a story is very important.
Yeah.
I look back at you know, all the songs that I've written and the ones that consistently people come up to me and go, that song, it's just one that tells
a story.
It pulls
you in. That's right.
And it's simple. It's efficient. The more simple I've tried to keep things, the results have had more of an impact on other people, I found.
That's right.
And having a... Because, you know, I went through a period where I wasn't really trying to say anything with the lyrics. I was just trying to, you know,
right,
make up
just match it up.
And those songs really just people were like, I don't know about that. But the ones that just told a simple story.
Right.
That, you know, just an everyday sentiment.
Yeah.
So I heard a quote. I don't remember who it was, but they said a great songwriter can take the mundane and make it sublime.
That's right.
Just take an everyday thought, feeling, emotion, whatever, and just make it sound beautiful. And that's where the music comes in.
That's, you know,
right. That's where your hook comes in. You have this great melodic line just talking about how you feel about some girl. It's an age-old, beaten, tired story, but it's what makes the world go around.
That's,
you know?
Right. That's right.
So if you can do that, then you have a song, you know. But my process is very, very pared down now. If I don't have the song mostly completed in an hour, then I don't. It's not there.
You don't
typically
pursue it.
Yeah, usually what I feel are my strongest songs have all come in some as little as 10 or 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And
I think any songwriter would say that. The ones that you don't have to work as hard on are the ones. A little trick I do too is if I think I've got something pretty good going, just a little tune or guitar, and even though I don't have any lyrics yet, but I'm kind of like, man, I kind of like the way that starts. And then it goes to this part. That's cool. Then I'll kind of leave it. And I'll see if I can remember it, like, a few days later when I pick up the guitar.
You come back.
And sometimes
to
I'll go, damn, I can't remember how I was doing that. Was I staying this long on the E minor? I'm kind of like, But then I kind of say, I'm at peace. I go, it must not have been that good if I can't remember how it was going. But then it might come back to me that night when I lay down and I go to sleep. And I go, I got it again. And if it's something that starts to really hang in there, I'll kind of say, okay.
It's,
you know,
good,
And then I kind of look around at whatever's going on at the time. I've gotten to where now with my own studio, we get that music going, man. We get the band going on it, the chords. All of our rough takes are just me with a mic singing the melody with no lyrics.
Yeah.
Just going, blah, blah, da, 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 da. You know, I've got me singing Girl of All Seasons or something, just, that's in our mind again, you know.
Yeah.
And I kind of let it almost come all the way to fruition, and then I want to save whatever specific images or ideas or thoughts I have for the very last.
Right.
I've kind of gotten in here where I'm kind of writing the lyrics, so to speak, as I'm just recording the vocal. You know, I want to use this line here, and I need something that rhymes. Okay, I'll say this. That'll. Now this new album's a little different. We'll look at that next week, I think, or a couple weeks from now. I feel like I've gotten a lot more. Maybe like my older songs, like Talent Show or Dishwater Hands, a lot more maybe story-driven image. You know, some of my High Tide in the Heartland and Bullfighter era is a little more abstract, a little more, I don't know. So if that, but, I think you're right. That simple story, you know, it's just
you
not.
You can never go wrong
with it. It's not hard to see why The Road Goes On Forever. It's something people remember. And
people just love a good story.
Or the Vincent Black Light, 1952 Vincent Black Lightning by Richard Thompson. It just tells that story. Same kind of song as The Road Goes On Forever. Just the guys, bad news, the girls, they split up. He's dead. She takes the money and gets the car or the motorcycle. You know, it's just that's just how it goes. So it's like a Western or something.
Yeah.
You just can't reinvent the genre. You know,
no.
Even Star Wars or something is a Western. To a degree. I mean, you just have the Han Solo's the old gunfighter and the kid and the menacing force, and they all come together.
Yeah.
With the wise old sage in the middle, Kenobi or some figure like that. And you can't say, well, man, let's make a Western about, you know, a guy that made quilts, you know, or something. You're kind of like, I don't know, man. I of course, that sounds like an Oscar-nominated film there.
It probably is.
Yeah, you know. Brad Pitt's daring turn. He turns the Western on his head by playing a meek, humble guy with glasses.
Next
a cross-eyed kid who makes quilts in the Old West. You know, or I don't know, or something. But Yeah, you do have those tried and true elements.
Yeah.
And it's a fine line between doing something, we've all heard it before, and doing something fresh, you know.
Yeah.
It's like anything else, books or movies or any art, you know, it's all been done before,
yeah,
so to speak. But it's like you say, it's giving form to that, giving shape, giving form to something that maybe doesn't have shape or form, you know.
Yeah, well, and we're all just talking about things that already exist, whether we write about them or not. We don't have to invent them. We just have to communicate them in some way.
It can be depressing to go read some Shakespeare because he sums things up in just a few words that whole guys have written whole albums trying to say that, you know. You know, you're just like, God, he just got it. That's just one little speech by this one insignificant character in this play. But man, the way he describes a young man's love growing in him is just perfect in those four lines. It's just like, geez, you know.
Well, I've been trying to make myself write shorter songs lately.
Yeah.
Because I've gone back and just listened to like some really good country songwriters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, guys like Vince Gill or Hal Ketchum, who've just, you know, written dozens of hits.
Yeah.
And in listening to how in 2 minutes you just have what they're saying.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's over. And
the sentiment, is there.
You know, I used to try to write these rambling folk ballads that have just gone for 7 minutes. And there's no impact
don't
eventually.
Don't I know it.
Yeah. You've produced one
I'm
or two
kidding.
Of those.
I'm just
and it's just it can
just watching the timer on the tape just hit like 9 minutes.
Yeah,
just going,
and
are
it
we
can
still
just
here?
Be a, and that's as much being able to do that. Some people might go, man, that's really impressive. But I think it's sometimes you're showing your weaknesses when you go on that long. You're like, man, you can't just pare it down to 3 minutes and get the hell out of here.
That's right. That's right.
Throw in a guitar solo and let's go to lunch.
Well, there's some songwriting talk there. A little process. We'll come back to this and revisit it. Thank you, Doug Holm. Love you, man. Old bass player for Phil Perch and the Full Band. His wife, Jenny.
So wronged by
children.
Phil.
So wronged by me. I guess I was moving to Nashville, and he was getting married, and I don't know. It's just one of those things that all happened at the same time.
I thought
time.
You said his looks had become a problem.
His weight became an issue. No, I'm just kidding. Doug, lean, fit. Oh, all fun and games. Doug Holm, listening in Austin, Texas. Godspeed, my
Thank
friend.
Thank you, Doug. Give us
Thank
a call.
Thank you, Doug. Thank you, Doug. Well, you know our sage out there in St. Louis, Mr. Eric Albers, always writes in about the podcast. Always has great ideas. We're going to get into his latest topic, talking about album artwork. I'm anxious to hear Kurt South's thoughts on album artwork here. We'll talk about our album artwork, good and bad, old and new, and where he stands on it for his own albums and those of others. His opinions and mine when we come back. Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. Hey, it's your old friend Phil Pritchard here. P2 Podcast from Trinidad World Recording, Fort Worth, Texas, y'all. Thanks for listening on philpritchard.com.
Boy, you just got rural on us there.
I know, radiofreetexas.org. Thanks for listening, folks. Oh, man, it's been a long, hot summer. We're answering some viewer mail here. Some viewers and listeners that we know, Doug Holm, the old bass player. Kurt South is joining us here today. And we're talking about, Eric Albers talked about album artwork, the fine art, maybe the lost art of the great album artwork. CDs, you know, you had the album LP covers get a little smaller with, of course, for, you had cassette tapes just insignificant size.
They were just postage stamps.
Then you have CDs a little bigger. Okay. Now you just have a little thumbnail size thing on iTunes sitting there. You know, a little bigger if, on your iTunes scrolling across your computer screen. Still something to be said for our album artwork for sure. Mm-hmm. But Eric said that, you know, what is the where does the line get drawn? He actually quoted David St. Hubbins of Spinal Taps talking about that you can there's such a fine line between clever and stupid. I was trying to think off the top of my head where album artwork maybe I kind of go, man, that's really great, or if I notice it that much, or is it that important to me, or where it really beats me down is just pretentious and stupid. Album artwork. You have any thoughts? Album artwork, old and new, that hits you good or bad? Like
I remember, there are those bands who their album artwork is much a part of the album.
Part of the album, that's right.
I think the Grateful Dead always was one of those bands.
Yeah, they had the psychedelic, very colorful, the skeleton, the mascot.
The steal your face skeleton on there. And Drive-By Truckers are a modern band.
I'm not too familiar with their album artwork.
The
I got
same
all their songs.
Guy, there's a guy in Athens, Georgia, who's a friend of theirs, who's done all their album artwork. And
What strikes you about it?
Well, it's a very they're all kind of gothic depictions of the stories that are going to be on the album.
Oh, okay, cool.
And I mean, it's great stuff.
I need to check that out.
And I mean, all their albums look very similar, but you know, it's really cool. It's distinctive. And I saw them at Trees several years ago, and they came through, and they even the big stage backdrop was. This guy had done this big drawing, you know.
Big white sheet kind of deal.
And it's just I can just look at the artwork and go, that's a Drive-By Truckers album. Just like I could with Grateful Dead or somebody like that. So
that's
it's a big part of their deal. It is part of their identity.
Consistency throughout the album covers.
So they're one. They really jump out at me, and I remember. An album we talked about in the vault, one of the first podcasts. It was Southern Accents by Tom Petty. It just stands out to me as being not good or bad, but just being hilarious.
And significant for the era.
Yeah.
We were pointing out that side one, you just had some of those great songs. And side two, the horns kick in. And some of
and you just have them Petty's dressed up like they were in a John Hughes film sitting on bales of hay. Just 85, you know, but
just getting ready to get in a DeLorean and drive off after the photo shoot.
Head to the mall and go to Spencer's Gifts.
I was trying to think what album covers, because all the cliche ones are, you know, all the old 60s ones, which a lot of them seem a little pretentious, and of course they get copied a lot, you know, Sgt. Pepper and stuff like that. I mean, traditionally are going to be seen as, you know, revolutionary album art. But what are some other packaging things that you've seen over the years?
Some guys Sticky really... Fingers, Rolling Stones with the zipper.
That was maybe the all-time most significant. Yeah. Andy Warhol with the actual zipper on the Rolling Stones on the fly of the pants there. Very
Free Will and Bob Dylan, where he and what's her name?
Suze Rotolo.
Yeah, Rotolo.
Yeah.
They're walking down the street in Greenwich Village. That's a very legend. That's one that you always remember. And, you know, I've gone to Greenwich Village and gone, is this the spot? Abbey Road.
Of course, I've told the story where I went to Abbey Road and when I was in London. Went on the Beatles walking tour of London. And I said, man, you were going to go to Abbey Road Studios. I said, you know, that's where that photo was shot, the famous photo of them walking across the street. They're actually not walking toward Abbey Road Studio. They're walking away from it. They walked back and forth several times. The shot they took was them going away from it. So I just say, you know what I'm going to do? I tell my wife proudly, I'm going to walk across Abbey Road Street, and I want you to snap that picture right as I'm walking across. It'll look just like the Beatles cover, but it's me, Phil, walking across the street.
Damn tourists.
That's going to be hilarious. Of course, I get there. Yeah, there's just a line of like 100 people who have the exact same idea.
Bunch of Japanese guys.
It's like a bunch of Japanese tourists and... you know, a Swedish guy in a wheelchair or something going across the street. I remember
What's
that.
What's wrong with you?
Nothing. I didn't. Yeah, that's so. My photo has me in line behind all these people going across the. It was kind of raining. There was cars honking. It just didn't work. I'm just like, man, this was a terrible idea, a terrible photo opportunity, And so unoriginal.
I can't believe you even considered doing that.
I know. There I was. Oh, that was it. That was me trying to recreate one of the most iconic album covers ever.
That's like somebody coming to Fort Worth and going to Billy Bob's and getting their picture taken on the stuffed bull.
Yeah, right.
You're that guy.
Get in line. That was me. Me in London. But I had London by the tail. I was like,
So
I'm gonna show this town. I'm gonna show this town that I know more than all these other tourists out there. Not to be, sadly, not to be. So that was my experience there. What are some other recent? I'm trying to think of any other. Of course, here in the studio is John Reynolds, who's done some great album artwork for the likes of us, Mike Mathis, John's Guns. Mathis or John's Guns?
John's Guns and
Mathis. Yeah, man, like the James Bond deal. Have you seen that? John's Guns.
It's really good.
Really cool, the James Bond, the pistol.
The Mathis one that John did, Drive Them Nails.
One of the
coolest designs.
Very cool design.
Yeah,
John did the Bullfighter Returns. Very cool drawing with the Matador. So cool album artwork, man. It's still out there, but more difficult to find. I think guys depend on it less. I'm always floored. The worst album artwork, by far the worst, and maybe there's a reason for that, is country music, or at least just plain Jane.
Yeah.
I mean, they're interchangeable.
Yes.
Just Merle Haggard with varying degrees of gray at the temple. Just him just sitting there with his guitar. Or Johnny Cash or Willie. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
Even today's, you know, Jack Ingram or somebody, you look at like, oh, here's all his records. They're just all just his face.
They're all headshots.
They're headshots. Why is that? How come nobody does the... Nothing looks like Brothers and Sisters by the Allman Brothers, or I don't know, name a cool looking album.
Well, I think a lot of country music is about selling the guy,
the face. Is that it?
Well,
the thumbnail.
Well, and you're selling the person, the idea of the person.
Yeah,
I think that's a lot of
it. Not so much the music.
Yeah,
you wouldn't see it. You wouldn't see a Jack Ingram album or Toby Keith album with a like a like a shirtless man being like elevated. Like surrounded by fog with rose petals raining down.
No.
Just, man, this is a piece of work by Brooks and Dunn. No.
I don't think.
You're more likely to get.
I think it's real easy to. There's a line that can be crossed where you get in all the pretense. Like, I see some of the rock and roll album covers.
Clever, stupid, yeah.
And I just think of Scott Stapp from Creed.
Being elevated.
Bullshit news.
The resurrection of Scott Stapp.
I just want to walk into oncoming traffic when I see that. give me the generic headshot any day over that.
The generic headshot. I'm always a big fan of the. I love the big gatefold. You know, the album that folds out.
Oh yeah.
The Goodbye Yellow Brick Road or something. Something with just a lot of cool little stuff in there that you can just go through. In your leisure time listening to that.
A cool Texas country album, artwork wise, was it Wicked Twisted Road by Reckless Kelly?
Yeah, it had a snake on it.
And it had the dice in the little spine, the clear spine.
Yeah. I remember that, yeah.
It just had little red dice rolling around. And that was super cool to me. I was like,
that was cool. Some cool packaging.
Reckless Kelly does a good job with their packaging, seems like. I remember.
Yeah, their stuff's always cool.
Yeah,
cool logo with the boot. Yeah, they got some cool. It's never just them just kind of sitting there going, huh? You know, on their.
Well, because it's not. Yeah, you know, and they're kind of rough, grizzly looking guys. So you're not just going to put headshot of Cody Braun on there.
Yeah. Apologies to Cody Braun.
He's a good looking guy.
Is he?
But it's just they're just not about the image. They're just
They're
just a band and.
Yeah, here they are. Here's their music.
Call me Cody.
I always like those old Allman Brothers. And band.
Allman Brothers had great.
But they all look like they just woke up after sleeping in the pasture, just with like stuff hanging in their beards, just sitting there.
But they just happened to wake up with a banjo and a dulcimer. That's what I love.
There's just a guy with an old timey, like the flash with the smoke, just the boosh, took the picture for the album. I love the, Landis Armstrong, my old great guitar player. He pointed out one time, and I've never forgotten this, and I've yet to really do it. And by God, I'm going to do it one of these days, I swear. He always talks about the Beard album. I've sold this concept to some bands about, man, making the Beard album. What does that mean? You think about artists, when they start off, you got the pictures of guys just, songwriter, Neil Young or something. They all those guys at some point make an album that's just got a black and white picture. You look on the inside, and it's just them with a heavy coat, scraggly hair, and just a real thick beard, just kind of staring at the camera.
That's every album for me.
I know that is every album for you. You've made every beard album, but it kind of leads you to think, man. That they, as Landis said, he goes, you just know that, man, they went somewhere to make this record.
They just gravitas.
Yeah, they didn't bathe, they didn't shave, they didn't go out after night. They were just up around the clock writing and recording and being cold.
They just stayed inside.
Yeah. like name a great album where a guy's wearing a floral print shirt, Bermuda shorts and Tevas and
every Jimmy Buffett record
and jumping up in the air. Yeah, well, I'm just saying, you know. But I'll bet some of his great records, he's got the long mustache and kind of the scrawny hair.
Best album ever. He was just
High
Cumberland Jamboree or whatever.
Just some of that stuff.
He's just wearing a flannel shirt and some hiking boots.
I think if the artist, this would be interesting to look. If the artist looks really happy on the cover, it probably sucks. You think?
I'm trying to.
That's
just
a blanket statement.
That is
there.
A blanket statement.
If you got a picture of a guy jumping out of a palm tree.
What about your guy, Elvis Costello? Always looks pensive, like he just ran over an old lady in his car, and he's not sure if he needs to stop and help. His album covers blow me away because he's always
like,
just got this
what?
Look on his. I don't know. He's just
always pensive, kind of one eyebrow raised, kind of
like. Like he just passed gas and he's not sure if anyone's going to
notice.
Like
he's in the middle of a debate or something. That'd be interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, he does. He is very pensive. I'm trying to think that, you know, the guy's got to just be staring straight ahead or some obscure art, you know, something like that.
What about the Jim Morrison album cover where he's just shirtless?
Just staring straight ahead. The Doors, there you go.
Topic
iconic.
For another day. The
iconic.
Doors, rock and roll's biggest beating ever.
Oh, well, question mark.
All right, keep going.
Anyway, album art. Trying to dig through some more ideas here.
Turning this the P2 direction, which I know you love.
Uh-oh.
Suburban Legends. Long before I ever knew you.
Yeah.
I just always remembered that album cover.
Yeah.
And I remember thinking when I first...
Iconic or just strangely
simple?
Well,
you have two that are Heritage Way.
Yeah.
With the fuzzy kind of Gretsch.
The exposure was pretty cool.
And there's just the picture of you on the inside, just very pensive, Elvis Costello-like.
Pensive, staring straight ahead, the glasses.
Wearing glasses.
Short hair, yeah.
I remember that, and I remember Suburban Legends, just you sitting in the armchair with your black Doc Martens on,
yeah.
Legs crossed.
It's right.
Looking very just too
cool
to care.
If you look closely at that album cover, too, there's a La La Teletubby on the floor next to me there. Because I'm just sitting there in the middle of all my kids' stuff.
Yeah.
We had our first child at that time. And that had a real concept of the Suburban Legends deal. Of course, that just befuddled every... This was made...
Still my favorite P2 album.
Oh, well, thank
you
very much. But, man, let me tell you what. I lost a lot of the flock with that one. Because we had Phil Comes Alive, just a bunch of drinking songs. I was on my way. Then I make that. Then I put out this artistic black and white kind of thing.
You talking about Heritage Way or Suburban Legends?
No, Suburban Legends. Suburban Legends. We had pictures of me holding the dry fruit on the inside.
Yeah, that was a little weird.
You know, it kind of weirded a lot of people out. But the whole point of it was the suburbs. And we took it all way out. In the where every house is the same kind of deal.
In my neighborhood.
And all of us were holding like common household everyday items. Like we were unloading the car of groceries. Keith was just like holding a roll of paper towels and Doug was holding some Capri Suns or something, you know.
Yeah, I don't like that album as much now.
Yeah. now that you know what's behind it. I said, man, we're out in the suburbs. Instead of Urban Legends, it's Suburban Legends. We'll be out in the suburbs. We're getting home from shopping. We're just, you know.
I will say this, just judging from your album artwork.
You're such a fan of mine. This is just so flattering.
No, but before I ever knew you,
yeah,
I would just be in the Sam Goody in Northeast Mall or something.
Yeah,
just looking through the local regional Texas section they had.
Just pictures of guys
and
with their
you,
with their dog and a shotgun.
You always stood out because it's just like, who's this weird
who
guy?
This guy
with these weird ass glasses.
Yeah.
And just staring at me creepily.
That's right.
And yeah.
You knew then that something great was held within.
Yeah.
Thank
but,
you, Kurt.
But like you said, on Suburban Legends, it's just you sitting in the living room with the Teletubby.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it really is just you sitting in your living room. But what about if it's a picture of Bob Dylan or Neil Young, just long hair, full beard, wearing a rabbit fur jacket? That's probably just them coming in from a day of raking leaves. It's probably it probably wouldn't have stayed.
But you also feel like you stayed up late by the fire and you know, put some coal in the stove and just wrote, you know, old man, you know. That's what you want to think is happening.
Or did he come in from just changing
here's what it comes down to. You don't want your artist to be comfortable. If they look like they're on vacation having a good time, they're just it sucks. It's usually not very good.
True.
But if you see the photos are lonely, the guy's just out in a field with kind of a lost look on their face, you know, kind of like you two in the Joshua tree, you're like, man, their mind is elsewhere. They're in this vast open space. Their music's floating in the air, you know?
I'm getting some ideas.
Whereas you see Roger Kreger, you know, just floating in the pool, just kind of like, hey, on his new album, you're just kind of like... You know,
why are you kicking Roger around?
Dude, Roger is he is the king, man, of throwing the big party. I don't think
he's
secret. What would you say?
He's always
boots
happy.
Boots and bathing suits and boots or something. But, I guarantee if Kreger came out with have you heard Kreger's new record, man? Just, oh, God, what is it? Hey, and, man, it's this yellowed cover. He's got a beat-up guitar, the rabbit fur coat, shaggy hair. Just a full beard, you know, and he's just playing, and he's got a candle in front of him. Yeah, you know, and he's just pounding on it, and the whole thing is just him and harmonica, and you know, a couple of local guys playing drums and bass. You'd go, whoa, cool, you know?
Yeah,
don't you think?
You would
at least
absolutely.
Be intrigued. At least I would be. I mean, not intrigued with what he does now. It's not really my thing, but something like that, I'd kind of go, man, I'd be interested to hear. What that was all about. At least listen to a couple songs.
I need to tell Reynolds immediately what the ideas I have for my the album artwork.
Look at Elton John, man. I mean, his old albums, first Elton John album, where he's just got the acne face. You know, as you said, I said, you know, he's a confused, sexually confused, oily faced
just
young man.
Gayness in bloom.
And I said on a just to recap one of the great lines ever on the podcast. I said, man, I like Elton when he was young, you know, just sexually confused, oily face, just looking looking out of sorts. Kurt's like, you just described everybody who's ever been in my rhythm section. Because I played with a bunch of future Elton Johns. Oh man, I can't remember what that was, like a podcast too.
That
or something.
Was.
Oh
that
man.
Was.
Great
no,
line.
I'm just
but
formulating.
You know, the tumbleweed connection, Honky Chateau, Elton just lost, disheveled. Boy, but when he starts putting on the Liberace costumes and jumping off the piano, man, then is the music
then you
shows.
Know you're just going to get the theme from The Lion King.
Too fun. It stinks.
All right, I want my next album cover to be me crying just a tear.
With a handkerchief just in a
and
fetal
just,
position in
just
a corner.
Track marks on one of my arms and just an empty bottle of liquor. Sticking out of my pants. Something like that. John, are you taking notes on this? That's what I need.
Reynolds is over here. Just he's thinking of a design concept.
He's
Kurt
doing
South
sketches right now. It's just a
That's
picture
right.
of me shirtless. Just,
laying on a bathroom
face painted
floor.
Like a mime or something.
Yeah.
Just smeared lipstick everywhere. An empty box of Franzi wine on the floor. This is good stuff, man. Write this
dude,
shit
down. Every person in the world would just look at that artwork and just think, man, this guy, I got to hear what this is.
South, age 35, sexually confused.
That's right.
Crying.
Some of the worst album covers were some of those like Ozzy Osbourne, like 80s.
Oh, yeah.
Like in a pirate shirt with makeup and like holding like a dove in one hand.
And like sandwich in the other. Or the one we talked about earlier, Jefferson Starship, the album with "We Built This City
on Rock and Roll,"
and they're just all wearing leg warmers and high top Reeboks, just doing like scissor kicks in the air,
like frozen silhouettes.
Grace Slick, the darling of the Woodstock generation, all of a sudden just has this teased hair and like.
Man, you ever seen that
Grace
Slick, the gal singer from, of course, Jefferson Airplane. Someone, her name came up the other day. We're talking about like girls, females who sing good, you know, got a good, cool rock and roll
and
voice.
She came up?
Well, me and Haggard are talking, you know, he's talking like, man, I always like Jefferson Airplane. But we started talking about the time, I think it's still on YouTube, where she was in Germany, you know, very famous Meltdown. You ever seen that?
Yeah.
Where she's, I can't remember that, it's not quotable, it's a family show here.
It is.
Yeah, but Grace Slick, I think it was in the late 80s or something, she was just over there doing some gigs. Picking up a check at some corporate deal. You know, Mercedes was having their Christmas party. They hire Jefferson Starship. Grace Slick's like just drunk. She just goes up on stage Yeah, just starts calling them a bunch of Nazis and talking about how we kicked their ass in the war and all this. It's just, I mean, equal parts horrifying and offensive and just hilarious. And she's, gosh, she just goes on. And just all these executives just going, boo, she's getting booed and they're throwing stuff at her. She's up there, yeah, all you want, you know, or something. Oh, my
gosh. I've seen you do that several times. Several times, yeah.
No.
Me too.
That's a joke. I've really only lost control one time on stage. One time. Absolutely lost control.
That was
control.
When you went after Stolly. Just tackled him in the drum kit at the firehouse.
Well, there's another time besides that.
See, there's more than one.
We had a fight on stage. Wrestling match in the middle of the show. No, it was early Poor Davids. We started drawing some good people at Poor Davids. Poor Davids was sort of, back in those days, sort of a wink-wink. You know, if you have a valid library card, you can come in and drink all you want, even if you're like 15. I don't know how old these guys were, but they're like, there's some high school kids in there shouldn't have been in there. And they started coming to our shows, and they'd get in these fights, man. This stuff was breaking out. And it was a Christmas show. I had a lot of family there, like my cousins, my aunts and uncles, and people were over here. And there's a lot of people in there, and a great crowd. We're starting to do pretty good. And then this fight breaks out in the front row between these two drunk high school kids. And they tumble onto the stage. This is Doug and Keith were in the band. Yeah, dude. And it had been happening in a lot of shows. And, man, I did lose control, man. I finally grabbed the mic, said all sorts of bad words. And I just told them, like, I don't even want you in here. Get out. You know, and I just – because, I mean, it was just totally – I was trying to play Meet Me in Las Vegas. And the crowd, just the air was going out of the room. Everybody was just uncomfortable. No one was coming in to get the guys out of there.
Did you kick him in the ribs or anything?
Yeah, Doug did. Doug kicked one guy kind of in the head as he found, they came onto the stage. He kind of kicked him and – so I just lose it, man. I'm just screaming, just, you think I want you to get out? Get out. Oh, man, I just went off, started cuss words, the whole deal. And as they left, they just froze in like mid-fight. Dude was horrified, you know, and embarrassed, and they left. And then there's standing ovation, you know. We had reclaimed back our show, you know. So that was the only time I really lost control. The band, it really spurred the band, though. The band goes, man, that was my proudest moment in this band. We just took control of our stage, you know. Because I was kind of new to the whole thing. You know, stuff would happen. Yeah. There'd be fights. I'm like, oh, gee, wish we stopped playing. I don't know.
I lost my cool about 6 or 7, maybe 8 months ago.
Really?
It's one of the only times I really
at
lost.
At Fred's?
No, it was at the Moon.
Oh, no.
Will Hobbs and I were just doing our two-man acoustic duo show there, and
Al Barber is now evolved into just, when have we just absolutely lost control on
Well, there's a couple girls who would, I guess they're TCU students, who would show up every week, and they wouldn't give me a hard time so much as Will. Mm-hmm. They would just, I think they both had a crush on him,
sure,
as most women do. Yeah. They love Hobbs. But they would just come up and they would write these long notes on napkins request, play this, play this, play this, and
just
give it to
Will.
Went
on and on, yeah.
Went on and on and on, and he was just getting beaten down, but he was being a nice guy about it, and just, oh, yeah, we'll try and get to it and put it. And they just kept yelling at him. They were sitting right by the stage, just giving him. And finally they got kind of mean-spirited with it.
Yeah.
And I just lost it and just dog-cussed them.
Oh, no.
And said, if you don't like what we're doing, get the F out. The door's right there.
Yeah, oh,
and
no.
You can kiss my ass in the pro. And just, and the owner of the bar is just standing in the back just, what are you doing? What?
Yeah,
you
know, yeah, yeah. Just running people out the door.
Get the hell out. Don't
you
ever
perfected
come back.
That over time. Just how can we take people in the bar watching me play and get them to leave as soon as possible?
Boy, it felt so good.
I know.
Because there's been so many times where you've just...
Well, you can't get taken advantage of on stage. I mean, it's something, especially when you're young, kind of starting out. Because, man, you're the youngest guy in the bar, 21, 22 maybe, man. Older guys just getting in fights, so they're heckling you. You're kind of like, whoa, what? You know, it takes a while to learn how to handle some of that
stuff.
We
had a couple at the Moon. Hobbs had to kick a guy in the chest.
And yeah, did he really? You kick a guy. Oh, you get people. Yeah, you get guys jumping on the stage, grabbing mics.
Yeah.
You know, and you're just, it's some old man. It's some, might be some 40-year-old dude. You know, I mean, you're kind of like, it was hard for me. It's kind of a quiet, somewhat, you know, kind of a guy that just sort of doesn't want to ruffle anyone's feathers. I'm just trying to play my music. It's hard to get to where you just kind of go, hey, man, you know, and you just dog cuss him off the stage. But I mean, you have to. It's sometimes
in
the situation.
So good. Will and I just looked at each other and kind of embraced as brothers.
Yeah. One of the best things I ever saw was the at Bob Schneider's Saxon Pub gig. Sit down, quiet, Monday night deal in Austin up there with his band. Actually, I wasn't there. Doug Holm actually told me a story that some guys were there, some executives from Tyson Chicken, the big chicken people in Arkansas. were in town for a convention. Maybe kind of didn't know Bob, didn't know how the whole thing was supposed to work. You're supposed to be in there kind of listening.
Yeah.
And, man, if you don't think Bob will get on you for, like, talking or something.
Oh,
or...
yeah.
So, anyway, so they're in there, and everybody's kind of like, don't let that fall on your head, dude. But the Kurt almost knocked a Fender Stratocaster off the wall. Yeah, but Bob's on stage, and evidently what happened, these guys were kind of in the back, and they were just there at the back of the stage, just kind of talking, and everyone was sort of uncomfortable because they see that Bob's being annoyed, and all of a sudden they're laughing back there, and Bob just stops in the middle of the song, and he just sits there and folds his arms and waits while these guys are talking and laughing. Finally, these guys realize the whole bar is looking at him, just in silence. They turn around, and Bob just goes, hey, man, you know, what's so funny? Tell me, I want to know. I'm right here. What is so funny? Everyone in here wants to know, man. We all want to laugh, too. What is it? The guy's just like, Bob just reaches into his pocket, just pulls out, like, you know, 20 or 30 bucks. He goes, here's your money back, man. Now, why don't you guys take all your stuff? Go outside and laugh, man. You know, if you're not going to tell us what's funny, then get out. Just total silence. They get up, leave, uncomfortable, and go out. Then Bob goes back into the song. Then Bob stops again and just, still uncomfortable, is hanging in the room. But Bob just sighs, looks at the crowd and goes, I probably should have handled that differently. I'm sorry. There, I feel better. And starts playing again. Everybody starts
just
laughing.
Jumps right back.
The room's back. It's his room again, you know. No more uncomfortable feelings. That's a master performer.
The greatest one I've ever seen is on Jeff Tweedy, the lead singer from Wilco. Some solo shows several years ago. And
yeah, he does from time to time. Yeah.
Made a DVD out of it called Live from the Great Northwest. It's a great DVD. And he's playing like in Portland or something. And,
yeah.
And he's in this big theater, you know, playing. And you can kind of hear some stuff going on in the back. And finally he just stops and goes, please tell me, you people in the back who are talking, what do you want me to do to get your attention? I'll play whatever you want me to play. Just is, and in his language gets colorful, and he gets more angry as he goes. He goes, what the F do I effing have to do to get you to effing pay attention and not talk? You're talking louder than I'm playing through the PA system.
Yeah, yeah.
You paid $50 to get in here. Why would you come in and talk? I don't understand. And then he just goes, we're all just going to sit here and be quiet. And he just folds his arm and just listens dead silent.
Oh, my gosh. That's how you cure it, man.
And he goes, no, come on. We're all going to be quiet together. See if we can do this. You know, he got the room back, though. That was the thing. Everybody,
that's right.
Everybody was instantly on his side. And
that's what the masters do. I've seen some people get rattled and just run off the stage. Then he got a riot. Then other people.
I've seen
like,
Todd Snyder do that.
Really?
Todd Snyder kind of panic.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't handle it. That dude in the back, man, he kept asking me to play All Right Guy, and I just freaked, man.
I just got up and left.
Yeah.
That's tough. So, some guys handle it better than most, but it's something that, unfortunately, you have to.
So please come heckle us so we can unload on
you. Yeah, we can work on it. We can hone our craft on how to keep the room, how to keep the show going. Well, man, there's some album artwork talk morphing into some how to handle hecklers and stuff like
losing
that.
Losing it talk.
Losing it on stage talk. Oh, man, there's a lot of just epic examples and stories of guys losing it. You know, silent treatment often works, kind of like Bob and Tweedy kind of do. You just sit there and wait, because that way you're not putting your neck out. You're not lecturing the guy. Where he can stand up and start yelling back at you, then what are you going to do? Fight him? And you're like, oh, gosh, you know. So you just calmly wait. You be quiet. Or something I'll do sometimes if someone's – I'll skip a verse. I'll just keep playing, and I'll just be staring over there, you know. And it'll turn the attention if some guy's over there yapping. You'll kind of – just very – then you kind of go into the next verse or
is
something
like that.
Is
it inappropriate to just pull a pistol out and fire shots into the ceiling?
I think that's considered not a good course of action. Okay. Yeah.
Now I know why that club in Beaumont will not book
you. Not book you again. Does he tried that one time?
Yeah.
Boot.
I thought that would be appropriate.
Kurt South. Man, well, good luck with the album with you with the smeared lipstick on the bathroom floor.
Thanks.
We're all looking forward to that. We'll know that you really put your heart and soul into that album. You know?
Oh, I can't wait.
Now, if you're in your bathing suit, you know, holding a coconut drink and some sunglasses, kind of shrugging like, life is good. By Kurt South, you know that we'll know that album sucks, but if it's you with blood on your face, like a blood trickling out of your mouth, just like laying face down in the snow. I'll just say, man, South, that's got to be a good record.
Just wearing a bearskin rug and some some buckskin boots.
Oh, man. Darkness.
Is anyone listening out there?
Is anyone
please
listening?
Call us and tell us if you're listening.
Help Kurt South. He's trying to make this record. I'm trying to talk him out of it or into it. I can't tell. That's Album Talk and Losing It, both in album artwork and on stage. Well, coming up here, what are we going to talk about in the vault, Kurt? You got something? Maybe you want to think about, talk about?
We'll think of something.
You know anything about the Kinks, man?
Yes.
Do you? Let's look
Waterloo
at the Kinks record.
Waterloo Sunset.
Indeed, man. They got some great albums, too, man. Let's talk about the Kinks a little bit, man.
Famous
I want to look at maybe a
good album to morph into.
Muswell Hillbillies. Boy, talk about a guy who lost it. Ray Davies, man, made like 5 opera albums.
Yeah.
I mean, think of The Who, and then think of like The Who on Broadway, and then think of like The Who performing, you know, a show with the cast of Rent singing Rodgers and Hammerstein tunes. And that's some of those Kinks albums.
It's like,
are that.
It's like The Who meets Grey's Anatomy.
That's just, right. And then some of the Kinks albums are just like, they sound like a great Wilco album. You know, just like, man, this is
they
amazing.
Sounded like The Clash before The Clash.
That's right. Yeah. We're talking about the Kinks when we come back. Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It's Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast. With me is my good friend Kurt South.
Hello.
Email me at phil@philpritchett.com. Thanks to Eric Albers and Doug Holm, our old bass player. And Eric Albers, you know, sort of the philosophical sage of the Midwest. Always has some good podcast topics. If you wanted to hear about album artwork, Doug wanted to know about the songwriting process. We've been talking on that stuff, running off on tangents. Man, my stomach's still hurting a little bit from picturing Kurt's new album cover, where we determine, is this album good or bad, by how happy the guy looks on the cover. So if you're trying to be taken seriously, stare off into the distance, you know, black and white.
The album will be called Tearful Apology.
Tearful Apology. Yeah. And Kurt's also been talking about doing a Christmas record where he's standing in front of a hearth. With a reindeer sweater and some eggnog.
Yeah.
But the eggnog, you're just pouring like a bunch of Jim Beam in there.
Just wild turkey.
Yeah, wild turkey. The eggnog.
Kind of winking at the camera.
Kurt South sings Christmas. Kurt South slurs Christmas.
A drunken holiday.
A holiday to remember and soon forget. Well, I look forward to that record. Maybe we can produce that Kurt South Christmas album here at Trinidad. That'd be something, wouldn't
I'm
it?
In.
Man,
you,
that'd be awesome.
I'll give you points on the back end.
Well, man, let me tell you what. I've grown up as a... I always had a fascination with the Kinks. Now, they've made like 59 albums, I think, in various forms. They were around in the early 60s, man, British Invasion. Gal, you really got me now. You got me so I don't know what I'm doing. All day and all of the night. That was the early stuff.
Yeah.
And man, it's really interesting. There's a big, long absence from the Kinks, at least in America. Now, not in the UK.
Yeah.
They're a very, always a very British band. You had Dave Davies, the main songwriter, Ray Davies, then you had his brother Dave Davies.
Guitar player.
Yeah, they were the two brothers known for getting in fist fights backstage, kind of that same sort of sibling rivalry thing.
Oasis 30 years before.
Yes. Oh, man, the Kinks were very much known for that. A lot of hostilities. But a lot of people know the Kinks from, you know, You Really Got Me. Of course, Lola.
Lola.
But Lola didn't come around till the 70s, mid-70s. When was that?
I thought Lola... Lola was late 70s. I was thinking of Come Dancing. That was like
Come Dancing. They had, well, they kind of had a revival with MTV a bit in the 80s with Come Dancing and Paranoia, Destroyer, wasn't that? That was early 80s. And they did that One for the Road live album, the Kinks, that I kind of had, and they were doing You Really Got Me and stuff.
Yeah.
But a very strange, I kind of dug around online to figure out, like, I mean, how come there seems to be these big gaps in their career? Interesting, there was a union struggle with them playing in the United States. They kind of burst out of the gate there with You Really Got Me and some mid-60s hits. Some kind of union trouble? It wasn't real specific online. And Ray Davies had a complete nervous breakdown back then when that was a medical condition. Now I think that's sort of a cop-out thing to say. He had a nervous breakdown. It doesn't mean... Now you have exhaustion or something. What do you have now? What's the rock star thing?
Exhaustion.
Where you just collapse from just doing too much drugs and not eating enough food. What do we call that now?
Just a good Friday night, man.
A good Friday night for you. But anyway, so Davies has some sort of nervous condition. He
cocaine-induced trauma.
Yeah, something. So they make the Village Green Preservation Society, which is a lot to handle. But, man, had some good songs
on
there.
That's the one with Waterloo Sunset, isn't it?
I think it is, yeah. I think that's right. And Johnny Thunder. They also had a picture book taken by your mother, where people love each other a long time ago. It was on a Hewlett-Packard printing commercial.
Yeah.
Really, remember when those pictures would freeze and they'd move it?
Yeah.
God, that's a cool song, man.
It is a
picture
good song.
Book. Love Picture Book, man. That was kind of the late 60s Kinks. Then Ray Davies, quote unquote, developed as a songwriter. And, man. There's a lot of stuff in there. I recently got like 15 Kinks albums from Mike from Bacon Fat had them. So,
of course.
Of course. So I'm checking them out, and man, it is a lot to bite off. Oh my goodness. I mean, 8-minute songs, Broadway-esque, you know, lilting piano, just bum 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 bum.
Well,
I'm a little man. I'm going to tea. I'm gonna have tea, and we're gonna go down the street. Just that kind of stuff, where I'm just like, dude, what is this stuff?
Well, you have to know, what you have to realize about the Kinks is that they embody old England.
They are a quintessentially British band.
Just like, say, Molly Hatchet embodies the South.
The South, right.
Well, or at least people's perception of it.
The Beatles and the Stones, see, were trying to sound American. They were playing blues. They were playing the blues.
Yeah.
The Kinks, not really. I mean, those early songs had an edge to them. But they were a very British band.
They were right off it. Well, and I've kind of researched a lot of Ray Davies, I watched a real good documentary on him. And, you know, they just came from the old London slums.
Yeah.
And were just, you know, that was their identity. I mean, just like Jimmy Buffett is Key West.
Yeah, that's right.
Man, they were just the
Willie
old
Nelson is Texas.
Covered.
Yeah,
dirty
Kinks.
Slums of London, you know.
Yeah, yeah,
and all of that encompassed, like, kind of the West Side Story type, you know,
musical.
That even worked its way. You know, they were kind of seen as predecessors to punk in some ways with their But they also had this other just British show tunes
kind of side
style
of them.
Stuff, you know, that was real vaudeville almost.
Yeah, it really is. Some of it's very, very bizarre. So you kind of have to wade through it a lot. The neat ones I've found are the albums that kind of strike out is pretty cool is Part 1, Lola versus Power Man, I think is what it's called. And it's got Lola on it. It's got I'm an ape man, I'm an ape man.
Yeah.
You know, don't want to die in the nuclear war. Very cool song. And, man, the great song that Dave Davies wrote called Strangers.
Yeah.
You know, strangers on this world, we are one. We are not two, we are one. Which Stu says Wilco covered. Which I think he just heard the Kinks version. It sounds just like Wilco. I'm like, dude, I think that's just the Kinks. I don't know. Stu was like, no, man, Wilco covered this, man. I kind of looked around. I don't know. Maybe they did a show or something. But Wilco sounds very much like...
Yes.
Dude, Picture Book, Strangers, could sound like sounds a lot like Wilco, man. Wilco kind of took all their samples.
Ray Davies and Tweedy kind of have a similar kind of voice too.
There's a lot
of similarities there.
Very much so. Ray Davies dated Chrissy Hynde of the Pretenders for a while. They kind of when the Kinks sort of got back in the United States, they kind of had a resurgence in the 80s with a couple of hits. You know,
Come Dancing,
Come Dancing, da 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 da. Paranoia, Big Destroyer.
Yeah, I remember, you know, when I was a little kid and MTV was really ramping up, the Kinks were...
The Kinks were around, you know.
Yeah, they were
One for the Road.
They were big with all that, with that.
Yeah, and you knew that they're like an old 60s band. They're a real band. You really got me, man.
Came
like, cool, you know, Lola was a few years back. A couple of years ago, we were playing the Gypsy Tea Room in the small room. And on the same night in the big room, Gypsy Tea Room had the small room, about 300. Then the big one could hold maybe 1,000 standing, you know. Ray Davies was playing a show on the same night we were playing. Now, his show started like at 8, so it was over like at 10. Then we started in the other room at like 10:30. So I just kind of snuck in, walked in, and saw the end of Ray Davies' set. And I remember feeling very mixed emotions watching him up there. Man, a legendary guy.
Was there anybody in there?
There was a few hundred people. Yeah, I mean 300-400 maybe.
Yeah.
Man, but he's just playing an Ovation acoustic with some baggy pinkish sweatpants and like a green Dr. Scrubs kind of shirt. Like maybe the same stuff he would have worn like in 1985.
Did he just come out of surgery?
Yeah, he looked like it or something. Yeah, he kind of had scrubs on, playing. Had like his daughter playing bass or something, some young girl out there. Mm-hmm. And kind of looked like his family on stage. You know, yeah, pretty cool, you know, but just playing You Really Got Me, or played All Day and All the Night. All day and all of the night. You know, and it was kind of weird. I remember looking at the room thinking, man, you know, he was a contemporary of McCartney and Mick Jagger and Elton John. I mean, he's a British rock star, you know, back in the 60s.
Still is.
You wonder why, though, man. He's playing for 300 people in a club, and these other guys are selling out stadiums left and right. You know, you kind of have to go, I wonder if he thinks about that or if he doesn't, you know.
Well, a lot of it has to do with, you know, like
the accessibility of the tunes.
Yeah, I mean, their stuff was, there was about a quarter of it that was
inaccessible.
Well, no, that was accessible. And then the other three quarters is just like, God, you would have to really want to make a day out of it.
Stuff. Albums like The Kink Controversy.
But I tell you what.
Kinda Kinks. A great one is, great, great, great one, Wilco sounding, great Kinks album is Muswell Hillbillies.
Mm-hmm.
Which has a complicated life on there. Kind of sounds like the band, you know, kind of has that down home, just acoustic driven, big fat drum beat. The song Alcohol on there is real cool.
Yeah.
Complicated Life. So some really cool stuff. If you're looking for some Kinks, maybe, besides getting like a, you know, greatest hits with some of their old stuff on there, Muswell Hillbillies by the Kinks is really great. And Lola versus Power Man, part one, Lola versus Power Man. Really, really cool. Start with those two, you know, and break into it, man, because there's a lot there, a lot of really cool stuff. And you'll hear a lot of, they're very influential band, as you said, you know. Punk. You know, the Clash, guys like that really went back to the Kinks. The old story on You Really Got Me, that tone, that ba-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. They say that Dave Davies actually, like, you know, got mad or was drunk or something and stuck his guitar into his speaker cone and tore the speaker. So it's got that flappy, kind of distorted, it's just got that weird hardcore tone to it. And they said, yeah, I mean, he like damaged his amp somehow, and that's why it's just got that drive to it, you know. Something, there's one of those kind of legendary kind of stories, you know. Like, you don't know if it's true or not, but that's what they say. So the Kinks, man, you know, even Lola, the biggest hits about a transvestite, you know, and all that kind of, there's a lot of that going through their music, a lot of real creepy elements, you know.
British rock is just very creepy.
It is creepy, dude.
The Stones are creepy.
The Stones are creepy. Bowie is creepy.
Yeah.
Elton is creepy.
No.
Freddie Mercury.
Yeah.
You know, you just
there's
don't.
Something in the British water inspires just
androgynous, just weird, you know, sort of odd subject matter. Very, very,
all of
very
just dressed like Mary Poppins, wearing eye makeup, but just on heroin.
Yeah, that's right. There's an idea for your new album cover, too.
Yeah, Mary Poppins.
You just dressed up, you just suspended in the air with an umbrella, just Mary Poppins.
But I'll tell you what, Waterloo Sunset is...
That's a great song.
I saw this documentary about Ray Davies,
yeah,
and it's centered around that song as being his just greatest accomplishment as a songwriter.
Yeah, yeah.
Early on in his career, and he did an acoustic version of it at the end of this thing. Man, that song is just awesome.
Yeah,
and
great
and the song's just about him leaving London.
Yeah.
And that one little section of London where he was from and how he feels about it and how he's going to remember it. and how it's it embodies who he is.
Yeah.
And man, it's as good a song as you can find in that context.
That's right.
I mean, it's just awesome.
Yeah, man.
And you know, you hear that song, and even if you're not from there, you feel like you've been there before, just hearing it, going like, oh yeah, you know.
Yeah.
So,
man, so check out the Kinks, man. There's a lot to wade through, but hey, we're the lighthouse in the fog. You know, the fog is all of those Kinks songs out there. The light, go toward the light. Muswell Hillbillies, you know, some greatest hits of their early stuff start there. Muswell Hillbillies, Lola versus Power Man, the Davies brothers, man, Ray Davies, Dave Davies, fighting, getting drunk, nervous breakdown, the Kinks. Well, that is all we have time for here today. Kurt South has been here. Oh, man, thanks for the laughs, Kurt. I hadn't laughed like that in a long time. You face down in the snow with vomit coming out of your nose and mouth. Just,
I'm glad I
don't know why that's
back.
Funny. You just, you tell it with such flair. Thank you so much, Eric Albers and Doug Holm, for writing in. Go to philpritchett.com. Buy all Phil Pritchett songs. You can buy it at p2tunes.com or go to iTunes. Also, you can buy Kurt South on iTunes as well. Thanks for being here, Kurt.
Thanks for having me.
And we will see all of you guys. RadioFreeTexas.org and philpritchett.com on the next podcast. Coming to you next week. Until then, take care.